ideally a person should read the whole Haggadah, but the bare minimum that one should read is from the line where it says Rabban Gamliel haya omer kol shelo amar shlosha dvarim elu b'pesach. From that point to the end of the Maggid, every person should be careful to say. But ideally, every person should say the whole Haggadah in their language, at their pace, but l'chatchila, every person should say it, if possible. Rabban Gamliel omer. I'll show you when we get there.
Okay. And also, what's the source for like a lot of these? Are these mostly Breitot that we're reading?
Yeah. Okay, so now we're going to quote a verse. What?
Where is the not so interesting part?
We're going to make it all interesting, you'll see.
Like Mishnah?
Yeah.
So again, so we're quoting a verse, and then we'll break it down words by words. The verse says, Arami Oved Avi, the Aramean tried to annihilate my father. Vayered Mitzrayim, so my forefather Jacob went down to Egypt. Vayagol Sham Im Tei Me'at, he lived there in few numbers. And there he became a great, awesome, mighty nation. So that's the verse. And now we'll start breaking it down piece by piece. Jacob went down to Egypt. God told him to do it. He didn't go there willingly. He wasn't going out to live in Brooklyn. He wasn't living in Crown Heights. He wasn't living in Deal. He was going because God said so. It's an attitude, right?
Where exactly are we right now?
We were in Deal, New Jersey.
Huh?
Yeah.
Onward.
Yeah, that's where we're up to. Vayago Sham. It says he was a sojourner there in Egypt. Melamed shelo yarad lishtakeh Mitzrayim. He didn't go down to sink and become an Egyptian. Ela lagur sham. He came to remain a sojourner. When I used to visit the United States, I didn't switch the time on my watch. People would stop me and say, your watch is off. And I'd say, no, it isn't. And they'd say, what do you mean? I'd say, it's on real time. They'd say, no, it's 7 hours off. I'd say, no, that's the time in Israel. And they'd say, oh. And I'd say, yeah, I'm going back. And they'd say, really, when are you flying? Have a safe trip. I'd say, I don't have a ticket yet. They'd say, really? What do you mean you're going back? And I'd say, I'm going. I don't yet know when. I don't have a ticket. I don't know when I'm going to be able to. But I'm headed back. And they look at me and go like, oh, you know that smile, that understanding smile? Like the men in the white coats really could do you one over, right? Oh, yes. But I'd look at them and say, don't give me that, oh. What do you say here in the Haggadah? That there was an attitude. Yaakov Avinu thought he was going to Egypt for 400 years. He knew he wasn't going to see Israel again in his lifetime. He knew that. And yet the Haggadah says, Vayogor Sham. His attitude was, I'm coming here to remain a sojourner. I'm not coming to settle. And that's why when they'd ask the rabbi, do we make a Chanukat HaBayit in Chutz Laaretz? We built a brand new shul. Do we build a brand new house? So many of the rabbis would look at them and say, you did what? You built yourself a house in Chutz Laaretz? Why'd you do a thing like that? You built a house in Chutz Laaretz? You're asking me if you could celebrate it? But why? You think you're staying there? You know the famous story of the Chafetz Chaim, right? A guy came to the Chafetz Chaim and saw his simple house. He said, Rabbi, I'm visiting this town, but I can't help but ask you, why don't you have any nice furniture and everything? So the Chafetz Chaim said, I'll answer you in a second, but tell me, you came to my house, why didn't you bring along a sofa? Why didn't you bring along a bed? So he said, well, I'm just visiting. So the Chafetz Chaim said, right, and I'm also just visiting. It's an attitude. Yaakov Avinu went down to Egypt and his attitude was, I'm a sojourner here. I'm not coming to settle down. Ela lagur sham, to be a sojourner there. Shneimal, the verse says, they tell Pharaoh, God tells him, you're going down to fulfill the prophecy of 400 years. And yet when they speak to Pharaoh, what do they say? They came and they say, we came to be sojourners. The only reason we're here is, because we're out of a grazing place for our sheep. The famine is too heavy in Canaan. So let us live in Goshen. But they're not looking to settle down. It says they went down to Egypt in few numbers. The verse says you went down, there were 70. Look at how the Jewish people multiplied. Wow.
Wait, how does that logic work? They said, oh, we're too many here, so we'll stay over there for a while and then we'll come back.
Right.
They won't be too many?
No, they said there's a famine, and so there's no more grazing place for our cattle. So we came down to Egypt until the famine's over, and then we'll let us settle in Goshen. So they come down, they only number 70. So the Jews in Egypt, they were wearing their black hats and their black jackets and long payas and long beards. Okay, so they weren't doing all that, right? But it says they were distinctive. A Jew is not supposed to be called Christopher. A Jew is supposed to be distinctive. The Jews did not change their clothes. They did not change their names. They did not change their language. There's a reason why Rabbi Listman is always careful to call you by your Jewish names. Because we're supposed to be distinctive. And a person should be used to his Jewish name. So this was one of our strengths. This was one of our merits. That when we went down to Egypt, we remained distinctive. Gadol Atzum. It says we became great and mighty. As the verse says, so there was a phenomenal miracle in Egypt. A woman would have six kids at a time. Usually when you have six kids at a time, they come out these scrawny little things. They'd have six kids at a time, and each one would come out weighing 8-10 pounds. Imagine these pregnant women. They must have been huge. Six kids weighing 8 pounds. I don't know. Kichayot Eina. You see, the verse says they were phenomenal, these women. But look at that. That's why the Egyptians were scared. They'd go into Goshen territory and they'd see these big 6-10 footers, huge muscular guys, and there are six of them. They all look alike. They're all twins.
What happened? Why do we get those genes?
What?
Why do we get those genes?
I can't tell you that. It's a secret. Maybe in a one-on-one. That's what it says. We were atzum. We were mighty. The Egyptians really felt threatened. We weren't doing anything. That the Egyptians saw something uncanny. You have big numbers and big people. So that was scary. Whoops. Varav, the verse says, we became numerous, as the Kamosh Nemaz, the verse says, the prophet Ezekiel says, I made you abundant like the plants in the field. And you became great, and you grew, and you came about with you came of age, you developed like a young woman, you developed with your chest, your puberty here grew, and yet you were uncovered, you were erom ve'eriya. So that's a reference in the prophet Ezekiel to the fact that the Jewish people multiplied, and yet they didn't have mitzvos. What kind of people are we? We were like a person that has the potential to be great, but they're totally uncovered. And here you have a tremendous insight. The mitzvos are like our clothing. We're up to Vayareu Otanu HaMitzrim. So think about what that means. A human being without clothing. Back in the Garden of Eden, that was okay. In the Garden of Eden, Adam only had one mitzvah. But suddenly after a certain event, he needed more mitzvahs. So this needs a broader discussion. We just opened the huge philosophical thought. We have to continue.
Could you repeat that philosophical question, though?
That the idea that the Jews without mitzvahs are called naked. So that means... Is naked a bad thing?
What mitzvot are called naked?
No. Mitzvot are like clothing. So okay. What does that mean? You see that nakedness wasn't a bad thing before Adam ate from the forbidden fruit. And also Adam didn't have mitzvos. Too many. He had one mitzvah before he ate from the forbidden fruit. So I'm saying that's a thought that needs to be developed. Why are mitzvos compared to clothing? A person without mitzvos is called a naked person. Okay. So we quoted one person, one verse and dissected it. Now we'll quote the next verse and dissect that. The verse says, the Egyptians harmed us. They hurt us. They tortured us. They gave us back-breaking labor. So now we'll dissect that verse. The Egyptians hurt us. Now, you know the Hasidish Vart? Why does it say, Vayareu Otanu? Vayareu Otanu literally means they made us bad. You see, what's her name? Golda Meir thought she invented this concept. Golda Meir said, I could never forgive the Arabs for making my children into murderers. You know that famous line? Terrible line, Golda Meir said. But the idea that the enemy caused us to be evil, It's not true. Our soldiers are not murderers. But in respect to Egypt, that is true. The Egyptians did bring us down spiritually. Vayareu otanu. They made us evil. The verse says, Egyptians were plotting. They said, let's outsmart them, lest they multiply, and then at a time of war, they'll join our enemies. So Vayareu otanu has multiple meanings. One meaning is, they became racist. They looked at us evilly. Vayareu otanu. They implicated us with evil thoughts. We never said anything bad. We were the most faithful citizens in Germany. My family has a yacht for a Sefer Torah from World War I, where the family dedicated it to fallen soldiers who dedicated their lives to the German army. My family has that yacht. They would read from the Sefer Torah every Shabbos with a yad, a silver hand, that had inscribed on it that the congregation dedicated this in memory of those two fallen soldiers. They were so proud to be Germans. They were the most dedicated citizens. They sent their children out to war to fight on behalf of Germany. But the Egyptians had no reason to worry about us, but they chose to look at us with an evil eye. They looked at us badly. They did us harm, because they sat there and plotted, how could we hurt the Jews? Vayanunu, they tortured us. The verse says, they made special officers whose job it was to figure out how to tax the Jews. Their job was to plot, how do you make the Jews suffer? How do you break the Jews? That officers who were in charge just of that. They made them build storage houses. Pitom and Ramses, those were on fault lines that would shake every few days. And so thousands of Jews would die in the building process. The buildings they would build would collapse on them as they were building. They were making them do work that was pointless labor, so that they would see that they were just making them work to break them. That's Vayanunu, they tortured us. The worst form of torture is making a person feel like you're doing it for the sake of making the person suffer. There's no other point at all.
What element of our identity were they trying to break? Like, we didn't have Torah, we didn't have mitzvahs. What was it about us they were trying to destroy?
I don't think they had a goal other than to kill us. They had a goal to destroy us, to break us, and ultimately kill the men and leave the women for prostitution.
So what about us did they hate?
That's a good question. Maybe the fact that we were mighty, maybe the fact that we were blessed. So Chazal say, if you look closely at the verses, the verse says first that we multiplied. Then it says we multiplied like vermin. So the Sephorno over there, right? I think it's the Sephorno. The second it says we multiplied like vermin, it's telling you that the Jews wanted to become culturally more like the Egyptians. So they went down on a spiritual level. And Hashem created a nature in the world that the more we try to become like the nations, the more they hate us. You'd think the secular Jews in Germany would be loved. Germany was the greatest place of secularism. That was where the reform movement had its greatest teeth. And yet, that was where the greatest enmity stemmed from. So Hashem created a nature in this world that whenever we go down to Vayishritzu, we become like the vermin. We lose our identity. So then Hashem makes it that they hate us. So you'll say, why do they hate us? We're more like them. They should hate us less. That teaches you that it's something beyond logic. It's something that's built in. They put hard work upon us. The verse says, the Egyptians made them work back-breaking labor. They'd make men do women work. Women do men work. And that destroys a man. For a man to stand there and do women's work, doing the laundry, doing the cleaning, you'd think that the women would break from the work. No, the men broke. The men couldn't handle it. They'd make them do pointless labor, as we described. They'd make them do endless labor. An Egyptian would come and tell the Jew, I want you to stand here and dig. You just keep digging. And I'm not going to tell you to stop. You just keep digging. And then he'd keep digging. And after about 14 hours, the Egyptian would leisurely walk over and say, oh, you're still digging? Keep digging. An hour or two later, he'd walk by and say, you still digging? Keep going. Without any limit. Then 5 minutes later, he'd say, stop. Okay, come out. Take all that dirt, put it back into the pit. Parech. Parech has two two meanings. Parech could be backbreaking because it's without a limit. Just keep doing it. And parech could be that you make the guy feel pointless. He's working and working and working, and you're making him, you're doing it just to break him. There's no point in what he's doing. So that's why we have a biblical commandment. We're prohibited from doing that to a servant. That's how we know the definition of parech. Yes?
What's the source for that?
The source for that is the halachic definition of parech that is prohibited. When the halacha defines parech, lo tirdebo b'parech, when the Torah prohibits it, so then the halacha defines that that's what parech is. So from that we can understand that that's what they were doing as parech. Correct. Next verse. Vanitza.